Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. Delighted to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. And we're honored to have via phone a reappearance, if you will, of Dr. Laura Larson. Dr. Larson, are you there?
I am.
Well, good. Before I jump into the program and do the standard intro, I just want to say thank you for coming on. And we get a lot of comments, or have gotten a lot of comments, rather, over our first series of programs that we did. And a lot of people in this community are very appreciative of what you do and your role, the role you play. So I trust you've been doing well.
I have.
Okay, good. Well, let's jump into it. Dr. Larson, Medical Director of Infection Prevention for Tanner Health System, is board certified in both infectious diseases and internal medicine. She earned her medical degree from the Mercer University School of Medicine and completed her residency and fellowship at Shands Hospital at the University of Florida. She's American Board of Internal Medicine, Infectious Diseases, and chairman of the Carroll County Board of Health. So if you will, it's been a few weeks and a lot of news stories going on last couple of days about what's being reported as the surge. But can you give us your perspective on the latest numbers, particularly with a focus on the local numbers?
Sure, Steve. We're definitely seeing a pretty dramatic increase over the last week of our outpatient case numbers. As of yesterday, our numbers were 818 individually positive cases tested at Tanner Health System. We've had 210 admissions since this started for patients confirmed with COVID. That's about 25% of our cases that we've tested end up being hospitalized. Currently, we have 17 people in the hospital, and what's interesting about this outpatient surge in positive cases is we haven't seen an uptick significantly in hospitalizations or in deaths. Our current death number is at 37. So that's kind of interesting. We've looked at our last week of cases and averaged the age of the positives, and it's about 41 years old. So we're seeing an uptick in younger people from what we see.
You may tell a little difference in my question this go around. I'm going to try to go for a little more positive. This has been a long, enduring, difficult process for everybody. And so I'm going to try to find the silver lining. There's a couple of things you said there that seem to be good. Apparently, the fatality rate is at the very least not increasing, correct?
Right. That's what we're seeing right now. Absolutely.
And the recovery rate is still very, very high.
Yes. Yes. If we look at our people that get the number of people discharged or the number admitted, we have over 157 discharges out of 210 admitted. So the recovery rate is still extremely high.
Now, can you attribute that or do you attribute that to what we've learned or what medical communities learned in recent months? And what are some of the successful therapeutics that you're using there on the front lines?
It's hard to really tell what's successful or not. We were able to get remdesivir about a month ago, and we've seen some, you know, very promising appearing results in the patients that we've put on it. We've also seemed to have had some positive results from the convalescent plasma. And based on the review of all the therapeutics yesterday that I did, those seem to be the two most promising things. I really, even from the get-go, we've seen about the same percentage of people that were reported when this all started recover. The death rate is still, we don't know what that is yet. I don't think we'll really know that until this is all over and we have we see a case fatality rate, but it's all over the board depending on where you look. And so I think that we won't know that until it's all over. But I think even from the beginning, we knew that more people would do well than not with this infection. So I still think that's holding true. I don't know that it necessarily has anything to do with the therapeutics we use yet, though, or not.
As far as the therapeutics you've used, and we talked in the early days of this about hydroxychloroquine, usually reporting these things, it's always been said that to administer them in the early stages of the disease gave them a higher rate of success. Is that still proving true, or did that ever prove true?
We I think the jury is still out on hydroxychloroquine. I don't know really what the answer for that one is yet. I know for remdesivir, administering that earlier is more efficacious than not. And, you know, the studies are showing us that if you wait too long and the patients are intubated, it's not as beneficial. And we're seeing that, too.
What about the people who are not hospitalized but yet have symptoms and are tested positive, but they're at home struggling with the disease? How are they approaching this?
Supportive care, predominantly. You know, resting, getting plenty of hydration. You know, that's the thing that's been eye-opening for this whole disease process is not one patient has the same symptom. You know, initially it was all the top three was the cough and, you know, shortness of breath and headache. And that's not, it's evolved to be a very unusual, you know, when people tell me they have a loss of taste or a loss of smell, that worries me more for COVID than just about anything else. But people at home recovering are just essentially doing supportive care. And if they develop signs of shortness of breath or have trouble breathing, that's when we encourage people to come and to be evaluated.
Is there a pattern of, like, I feel good for a day or two and then I feel terrible and then I'm back to feeling good? Is it kind of up and down?
It seems to be. It's really across the board for the people that have symptoms. What's kind of struck me interestingly in the last couple of weeks is how many people don't have symptoms that are testing positive or very, very mild symptoms. And I, you know, these are probably the asymptomatic people out there or the very low symptomatic people that are potentially still contagious. But it's amazing to me how some people we call and they just, their comment to us is, well, I just don't feel bad.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think as we all struggle to try to get to the truth, because there's so much noise out there, if you will, what's your perspective on testing? We're testing so much more, and there are multiple types of tests, the quick return tests and the ones that take 4 to 5, 6 days. What role currently in our current stage fighting this pandemic does testing play?
So testing is still problematic for a bunch of different reasons. You know, we still have the two main ways we test. We test with the PCR, which is the nasal test, and we test with antibodies. So the nasal tests, the rapid ones, we have found that the ones that are really short and rapid may not be as sensitive as we would have liked because they don't cycle long enough to be sensitive to pick up some of the DNA that's there. So that's problematic. We know in the hospitalization patients that if we really suspect they have COVID, we get a negative test, we test again. Right now with antibody testing, the American Society for Microbiology doesn't recommend antibody testing to detect acute or recent illness yet, and that's simply just because the antibodies are variable with how quickly they go up. So I've reserved antibody testing for people that I really think had a consistent illness about a month ago, so that hasn't really changed for me very much. Again, still acute testing, the nasal seems to be the most sensitive, but again, if we really feel like patients have it, we test more than once, and we actually do that with antibodies too, because the prevalence of disease in our community is, we estimate it to be about 9% of our community is infected right now, and so when that prevalence is still really low, repeated testing may be necessary to get a diagnosis.
9% of the community, that's, are you pretty confident in that number?
I'm as confident as I can be looking at Georgia DPH numbers. You know, if you look at the DPH numbers of how many tests that are positive, it's 9% of what's being tested. And our own numbers, it's about 9.8% of what's being tested is positive. Of the antibody numbers for the state, about 5.6 is testing positive. So I'm as confident as I can be with the data I have right now.
Isn't there or is there a debate in the medical community regarding the antibody testing?
In what way, Steve?
Effectiveness, accuracy, or effectiveness is not the right word, but accuracy, isn't there, it's just, you kind of implied, if I took it correctly, it's kind of a secondary type methodology, right?
Yeah, it is, because it's not helpful as much early on. You know, the studies that we have, you know, not looking at COVID, but looking at antibody testing, IgMs can go up within a week of illness. But when looking specifically at COVID-19, the IgM, which is our early antibody detecting acute disease, goes up on an average of about day 12 is when it goes up. So you're going to miss people that you're testing early on in disease if you're testing using that methodology. The sensitivity and the specificity really isn't known. I got to listen to a talk with some of the Emory researchers that are doing antibody testing, and that what they're actually doing is trying to confirm their sensitivity by taking blood they pulled from people last year that didn't have COVID to determine that. So I've read some small studies on sensitivity and accuracy of antibody testing, but again, I think that we really don't fully know. We have some small studies that show that it's not perfect, but we just don't know yet. If you look at the labs, they tell us it's, 99, even some of the major labs, LabCorp and Quest, tell us that the sensitivity is 99% and the specificity is 96% or close to that. But that's, again, when those are published, those are very small studies of accuracy. So, the true accuracy is just not going to be known for months to maybe a year yet.
In the early days of this, I recall we talked about how the antibodies could be used to develop a treatment mechanism for this. Has anything been done on that?
Yes, they're studying, that's the idea sort of behind convalescent plasma. People that have had the disease that donate plasma, and that plasma contains antibodies to protect people that are infected when it's infused. And I know there are efforts to do monoclonal antibodies, which is a specific antibody against COVID. We don't have that available to us yet, just the convalescent plasma.
Our guest this morning is Dr. Laura Larson, Medical Director of Infections Prevention for Tanner Health System. We're going to take a break, hear from our fine sponsors. If you've got a question, we're streaming live on the News Talk 1330 Facebook page, and we'll be back in a moment.
A well-rounded education includes much more than just academics. At Oak Mountain Academy, we encourage our students to find their niche in any of our 42 co-curricular opportunities. Over the past 5 years, we have brought home 5 state and 20 regional athletic titles. Our one-act play and literary teams continuously compete at the region and state level, and our academic teams bring home first place more than not. We are warriors creating legacies. To learn more, visit oakmountain.us.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. Strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong. That's Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong.
Welcome back to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Braddock, your host. We're honored to have via phone Dr. Laura Larson, Medical Director of Infection Prevention for Tanner Health System. Looking at our Facebook page, of course, a lot of nice compliments about your work. And then we have Tina Barr, who says, amid the percentage of deaths having declined, the CDC admits coronavirus on verge of non-epidemic status. Have you heard that?
I haven't. And I'm very wary to call that when we've had as many deaths as we've had in the United States over something like this and worldwide as well. A pandemic and, is a disease that spreads to essentially all continents, and we know that's what that is. I don't think this is a disease that we typically see, and we don't typically see something like this cause as many illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths. So I do think the numbers are less than we initially were fearful of, but it's simply not over. So I'm really careful to jump on a statement of how bad things are when we're still in the middle of it.
Well, now that it's been, 4 months or so of this, there are a couple of things that have become quite controversial, and not the least of which is the wearing of masks. So, and I think initially, it was the Surgeon General that basically reportedly said that the masks were not effective. But currently, your opinion, are masks effective? When and when not?
So I'm a big mask proponent simply because we don't have really any other way to stem the spread of disease when people are in close proximity. Initially, I think that I know the big concern about people buying masks was to make sure healthcare workers could get them. We were very, very fearful in the early stages of this that we would not. And so the big movement of CDC and the Surgeon General was for the public not to wear masks or not to do masks. Then it was cloth masks. Then it was, you know, now we have masks and you know, it's really kind of come full circle. But the bottom line is any facial covering is going to be effective at preventing the transmission of respiratory droplets. I have a lot of people ask me whether or not asymptomatic people can spread disease. That's true. We have seen that not only in the literature, but in our family case reports of people that get infected. So mask wearing when you cannot socially distance is an effective way to prevent others from getting sick if you were asymptomatic and infected, or if you're symptomatic and infected. And, you know, the thing that bothers us is when we call people and we tell them that they have tested positive and they say, well, I don't have typical symptoms. What are your symptoms? You know, it may be just allergy-like symptoms. Well, those are people that are symptomatic and potentially infecting others because they don't think they have COVID. So that's why I'm a proponent of mask wearing, because not every case presents typically, and even mildly symptomatic people can spread disease.
This may seem as unnecessary, but I'm not sure that it is. Are there any guidelines as far as to properly wear a mask, and how long is a mask good for? I mean, obviously, we've all seen, you know, people wearing masks that are pulled down below their nose. So, I mean, what are some of the simplistic recommendations on how to properly wear a mask?
So the best thing you can do is wash your hands before putting your mask on, not touch your mask, and then wash your hands before taking it off, because that way you're not contaminating yourself when putting it on or off. In terms of how long they're effective, you know, before this all started, we wouldn't wear masks day after day after day, but we do that now. If you're have a surgical mask and it's been able to adequately dry out, it's probably still effective. We don't know with 100% certainty. With a cloth mask, I would launder those daily because those tend to hold on to bacteria more than a paper mask do, and moisture as well.
You're in a unique position in that you're the chair of the local health board and, you know, an attending physician there in the hospital environment. We all, I think, agree that hindsight is 20/20. Was the shutdown of the economy, you know, beyond the very early weeks of 2 or 3, 4 weeks to flatten the curve, which was done successfully and not overwhelm the hospitals, in retrospect, hindsight, the shutdown of the economy, did it go on too long or not long enough?
That's a super hard question. So I think in the beginning it was absolutely necessary because we weren't ready in healthcare anywhere in the United States. You know, we couldn't get what we needed. So I think the shutdown initially was extremely helpful to buy us time to be able to take care of people. For me right now, I don't like to wear masks in public necessarily either. But I feel, you know, and I've been reading a lot of economic studies, I feel like if we had done a better job wearing masks, maybe we didn't have to shut down as long as we did. But we don't, you know, that's all hindsight. I feel like, you know, when I read the economic studies now, that if 80% of us would wear masks, then our economy would recover and our gross national product would improve and we wouldn't have to socially distance. A lot of people don't go out these days because they're fearful. And are not driving the economy either. But I feel right now the only tool that we could potentially do to help with that is mask wearing. And, you know, again, that's very unpopular, but it is what it is. It's really your only tool right now.
So if I can reinterpret that, because the fear factor is enormous, in my humble opinion, in the society community at large. But if we saw more and more mask wearing, then maybe the fear would be reduced.
I think so.
Okay. We're going to take another break. We'll come back and we're going to talk about the hot topic question of children going back to school with Dr. Laura Larson. But first, this word.
For more than 70 years, you have turned to Tanner Health System for your healthcare needs. As our community moves forward, Tanner is here for you. Strong, safe, and close to home. Routine medical appointments, urgent elective surgeries, and imaging are back on the calendar at our hospitals and Tanner Medical Group practices. With the safety of our patients, staff, and community always our top priority. Learn more at Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong. That's Tanner.org. Hashtag We Are Tanner Strong.
As a graduate of Oak Mountain Academy, I've found that my experience on the mountain prepared me beyond all expectations. As a junior at Auburn University, I approached my studies with great confidence thanks to what I learned at OMA. When I think back on my time on the mountain, I think of my teachers. Their genuine love and concern for me as a student was always evident, and now, as an adult, I still foster those relationships. I'm Carly Robinson, an Oak Mountain Academy alum. Visit oakmountain.us to see how you can offer your child an amazing opportunity to be a warrior.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. Our guest this morning is Dr. Laura Larson, Medical Director of Infection Prevention for Tanner Health System. She's via the phone. Before we stop, jump in talking about schools and the kiddos, we've got a couple questions on Facebook that are somewhat similar. If you don't mind, a couple people tuned in late. Can you review the numbers as they relate locally, the stats, and how is Tanner doing in terms of ICU capacity, and is the hospital currently, you know, operating gangbusters in dealing with the coronavirus?
So if we go back to our numbers, as of yesterday, we had 818 positive in the community, and those are individual cases. Those are not repeat tests. Those are individual persons testing positive from our health system. We had 210 hospital admissions, over 150 discharges. We've had 37 people pass away with complications of COVID. Currently, we have 17 people in the hospital with COVID. We have 26 patients that are in the hospital that are suspect COVID patients. Right now, our hospitalizations are pretty stable. They're not at we are not at surge with our COVID cases. Right now in the ICU in Carrollton, we have 5 COVID patients. So that's, you know, if we look at the fact that we have 18 ICU beds, we're not full of patients with COVID right now. And again, that goes back to we are seeing a tremendous surge in outpatient cases in younger folks, but we have not seen a surge in our hospitalizations, ICU admissions, or deaths right now.
Okay, one of the most important questions with the age going down, what are the current risks to children, particularly as they prepare to return to school?
So, you know, we've seen some children not do well, but for the most part, children fare better than adults with this disease. The school thing is very hard. I've been watching the governor very, very closely in what schools are going to do across the state and across the United States. So in the last week, we've seen the governor release a press release of buying 3 million masks, cloth masks, to distribute to the Department of Education. I'm hopeful that we do some type of social distancing with our schools if we can. It's very difficult. I mean, I know that's very hard to do. But if you look at CDC recommendations, the Department of Education's recommendations, all support if we continue to have the amount of community transmission we have going right now, doing some hybrid of reducing class size, trying to socially distance, and mask wearing, at least in those middle and up high schoolers, because the lower school, that's a lot harder. So I'm just watching very, very closely. The University System of Georgia, it has announced that mask wearing would be mandatory in buildings as of July 15th for students and faculty. So that's where we are right now, and I think it's a reflection of our tremendous number of cases that we've had go up in the last week to week and a half in the state.
Well, let's integrate the we mentioned the fear factor. Obviously, when it comes to a person's kid, child. There's probably very few things more important, if anything, to them. How would you recommend that they balance the risk with the child going back to school? That's a vague question, but let me try it again. For a parent that's very fearful for the safety of their child, what would you tell them?
You know, I've got two children. They're 14 and 16. And, you know, the deaths that I read about in children are typically more teenagers than young children. I stress to my own children and will stress to them. I mean, I've got a senior. She desperately wants to go back to school. I've got a ninth grader that's so excited about starting high school. I just am going to stress to them to, you know, be smart, wash your hands, don't touch your face. They're going to wear masks at school. They just are, you know. And what I'm struggling with is, you know, I have hypertension. My husband does too. And I think I may have told you that my husband's best friend from medical school, who's also a physician, died in the last month of COVID, 50 years old, with no health problems. So we're still not without fear of our own safety. And so that's what I struggle with. My kids going to school in the fall is how do we all stay safe? And I think we're going to all have to just, practice what we're doing now, which is socially distancing when we can and wearing a mask to protect us when we can't, and just trying to be very smart with any symptoms that could be COVID-related. It's a hard question. I mean, right now, going back to school is what preys on the back of my mind more than anything for this.
Well, let's, as we run out of time, let's move to the other end of the age spectrum. Back to hindsight being 2020. One of the most heart-wrenching things, of course, is for our elderly population in nursing homes and assisted living facilities not being able to see their loved ones or to communicate in a close fashion with their loved ones. Again, a hindsight question, did we do all that we could for our elderly in nursing homes and assisted living places?
You know, I think the thing that was so difficult is when we had that first week of cases, it was already in our nursing homes locally. It was already there. So I think minimizing visitation and the staff did an excellent job. I really do think I have to commend our local nursing homes. They really stepped up and did a lot to protect their residents. And we fortunately have not seen local outbreaks in our nursing homes recently. So that really shows that they're doing a good job at, you know, making sure their staff is healthy, making sure their staff protects themselves and making sure that their residents are protected too. So,
okay, well, we've unfortunately, again, run out of time, and I want to thank you for your service and all the medical health care providers there that work with you. And I think we've all learned by now, what is it? Wash your hands thoroughly, use hand sanitizer, wear a face mask, and stay 6 feet away. And I think I like to think the whole population is quite educated on that by now. Do you agree or maybe not?
I do. I think not everyone wants to do it.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that myself, too. Anyway, we all have our moments, you know? We just all have our moments.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, and it's exhausting. I want it to be over more than anybody, I promise.
Well, I would imagine so. Probably nothing truer has been spoken. But, again, we thank you. We look forward to having you on again. Continue the good work, and we salute everybody that's associated with you in this effort. So, Dr. Laura Larson, thank you. Have a great day. And you've been in tune to WLBB Carrollton.